Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
The Aviva yesterday in front of 46,000 saw Leinster beat Munster by 23 points to 17. We have Peter Amani here talking about Munster, who gave Leinster too many chances in his opinion.
We found ourselves in our own territory a huge amount, having to exit. You know, I would say, I don't know what the territory in possession was, but we certainly spent a lot of the game in our half, and very, very little set piece off the top of my head inside Leinster's half, even 22, certainly two or three opportunities for us, which is, as I said, you've got to give yourself a chance and an opportunity, and we didn't today, unfortunately.
And he was very irritated on Sky Sports as well when he did the immediate post-match press conference, where he was saying that the penalty count and the discipline generally from Munster was incredibly poor, was the phrase he used. We have Andrew Dunn here in studio. Andy Dunn, formerly of Leinster, Harlequins, Connacht. Thanks for coming in.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
So Leinster 23, Munster 17. Sum it up for us. It didn't boil over at any stage as these games go. I think a lot of people in the build-up weren't expecting fireworks, and we didn't quite get fireworks. Talk to us about the quality of the game, the intensity of the game.
I thought there was moments of quality, particularly from Leinster. Munster, to me, looked like a team who are still trying to work out what are their best combinations. Probably not ideal the week before a European game, but it's where they're at. They don't have a clear front runner for 10, and I think that kind of eats into how the team plays in terms of general patterns and structure on the field. Okay. If you look at how belligerent at one stage Sexton was in terms of kicking high balls up onto Earls' wing with great effect, because he was controlling the game. He felt very comfortable to not include variation, for example. And he peppered a guy, and he did it, and it gives his team a sense of purpose and a sense of clarity in terms of what they were trying to do. Munster were a little more falling between stools, and I think that does come from probably not having a clear-cut option at 10 right now at the moment, and not with the most clarity or shape in their game going into Europe.
So not having that leader, that general on the pitch to run things. Because people mightn't have seen the team. It caught a lot of us by surprise the way they set up. So they had Hanrahan at fullback, they had Blindall at centre, and they went with Keatley at 10 alongside Conor Murray. So they're your three potential 10s for the year, all knocking around in the back line.
Yeah, it was hard on Scannell, actually, who's been playing very well.
And did very well last week against Cardiff.
Yeah, I think Keatley did very well the previous week as well, and earned his start. But that's really a new combination at 10 to 12, a new combination at 12 to 13 with Chris Farrell. Combination with the likes of Hanrahan coming into the line in attack at 15, that there's a hell of a lot of changes going on. It was experimental. It was certainly, I would say, brave the week before a European game as well. But I would strongly doubt they're going to pick that same starting back line going into the Castro game, which again would mean they're going in with a new combination into the Castro match as well. So they're a little undercooked at the moment.
And as a potential combination going forward of Hanrahan, Blindall at centre, Hanrahan at fullback, and Keatley at 10, was there enough in it to make you think, oh, well, that might actually work when these guys get four or five games together?
Well, I think all three players have the capacity to play together and do it well. They do need a bit of time, like in any new combination like that. It can work, but it's whether Munster have the patience or the fans have the patience to look at an experimental setup a week before a European game and say, okay, is that good enough? It's not August, it's not pre-season anymore. There's been 5-6 games.
And the number of variations with those three players, if you say you decide I want those three in the team, then very quickly you have to be fair to them and give them two or three games with a certain layout of the back line, and then you might say, okay, let's try Blindell 15 and Hanrahan centre now with Keatley, and then they have to get another two or three games, and then there might be another variation that you think, well, we've got to give that a chance, and ultimately you might get to one, you might stumble across the right one, but you could be 10 or 15 games along, and no coach has the time to do that. So they'll never actually, they're going to have to figure out what the right combination is through a mixture of training and a bit of luck.
Well, I think it's interesting to say no coach has the time to do it. I think Erasmus is not hassled by time anymore, because he's obviously going to leave around November, December, whenever that time comes. So potentially he feels less pressure in terms of results, potentially. But he, it's I always think a player needs probably 3 80-minute periods in a row in any position just to find their feet back into, get to the pitch of a game, get their fitness levels up to standard, and yeah, their decision making under pressure usually is rusty coming back in from pre-season.
Yeah.
We would have seen that Murray had a relatively quiet game, Jack McGrath had a relatively quiet game. Yeah. They're kind of tiptoeing their way back in.
Keith Earls being the exception to the rule.
Yeah, he had a really good game.
First time back.
Yeah, he was... I think he benefited from Munster's opportunism. Munster didn't construct too much. Okay. They turned over. The first try, obviously, was the Keatley intercept. The Leinster wraparound play being Sexton hitting Furlong, who he receives it back from Furlong, and for Johnny was a wayward pass. So between Johnny's wayward pass, you'd like to think either he'd pass better in that situation or Henshaw would have caught it. But Keatley intercepted. That wasn't constructed by Munster play, but if they did construct anything, Earls was on the receiving end. I thought also Tommy O'Donnell's play coming through the line out from deep has been kind of glossed over. If a French back rower did what he did, run 60 metres, tie in three defenders with great subtlety. He ran a swerve, he sidestepped, he drew Adam Byrne and Carberry and passed to Earls to set Earls free. We have a tendency to slightly gloss over that and say, you know, where was the Leinster defence and the line out? But I thought Tommy O'Donnell's contribution there was superb.
Yeah.
The other thing that potentially has been glossed over in what I've read since or looked at since yesterday was Furlong's contribution to Leinster's attack. So as a tight head, standing as first receiver, he's going to draw two or three defenders always because he's such a bullock when he carries. You know, two or three guys usually need to tackle him. But what he's doing now is he's catching that ball relatively static, very close to the line, and he's putting it behind his back to Sexton again, which, you know, you'd be happy enough if your 12 was doing that well.
At one point, Stuart Barnes said Furlong's playing like a 12.
Yeah. I mean, it's an incredible addition to his skill set. First of all, for a guy who's probably, he's either lifting in the line out or he's scrummaging as a tight head, which is physically demanding at the best of times.
Yeah.
He's then going out into broken play as a first receiver off a nines pass or a second receiver off a tens pass. He's still in a decision-making role. And he's actually finding guys in gaps with no look passes. He didn't turn over his right shoulder to look where Sexton was.
Right.
He flicked it behind him. So he held three defenders. It didn't work, obviously, with the intercept for Keatley, but it worked for the second try. He held in two or three guys. He passed behind the left shoulder on this occasion to Sexton, who, you know, that wraparound Leinster and Sexton have used ad nauseum for about 6 years.
Yeah.
So and in the, you know, modern day video analysis, everybody scouts everybody from week to week. The fact that that play is still working,
I know,
shows excellence in the execution as opposed to people, you know, going to sleep in defence.
Well, to use a band, you know, if something works, the laws of physics still apply, even if you know what's coming. Defenders know Aaron Robin's about to cut in onto his left foot at any given moment.
Yeah.
But he does it so well, and he's the one who chooses the moment when it happens. So the defender can still only react. He might know it's coming.
Yeah.
But there are examples in sport like that, the Sean Kavanagh shimmy.
Yeah.
You know it's potentially coming, but if the other team have weighed up the physics of it all and Sexton sees the moment and Furlong reacts that well, then even as it's happening, you're going, oh my God, the bloody loop is doing us here, but I can't get close to him. It's about the execution.
Well, they did it so well, particularly on the second try, where, like I just mentioned, Furlong passed it over the left shoulder. But on that wraparound, Sexton also had Scott Fardy running a line that was out in to draw defenders and push the ball behind his back.
Yeah.
That wasn't, to me, done by accident. That's kind of a set play, off-phase play. And that's the type of thing that Munster are missing out on by making combination changes this late on. There was a sense of purpose in Leinster's attack, because they're comfortable in their roles and their positions. Mm. The sense of purpose and construction of play in Munster's attack is not quite there because they're still kind of, you know, experimental with some combinations. And that sense of purpose and clarity in attack won't come until they get settled, until they get 3 80-minute periods together.
One of the commentary team during the game said three quarters of the way through that both teams were playing a very similar style of rugby. We're trying to break the opposition down in the same way and we're defending in a similar way. Are these two very similar teams in approach, even if Leinster are slightly ahead in terms of clarity and where it's all at? But in terms of what they're actually trying to do, are they similar? Would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't. I think Leinster just look very composed at the moment in general.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, Sexton's kicking game was excellent, and there was variation in their attack in terms of the point of attack coming through midfield wasn't always just Sexton, wasn't always Henshaw, and they used forward runners like Furlong. The Munster attack was disjointed. It wasn't similar in style to Leinster, in my view.
Can you see what Munster are trying to get to?
I'm not sure, because I'm not sure if they know themselves. I mean, if you look at their front five, obviously Dunnick O'Ryan is gone, and I think he's missed. Mm. They had Robin Copeland in the second row, who is, he's an out-and-out back row, and he's an excellent back row, but he played in the second row yesterday. Billy Holland has been converted into a second row, but he originally was a back row too. They if you're going to play two back rows in your second row, you're essentially taken to the field with five back rows. Mm-hmm. So you'd like to think they'll move the ball around a lot, but they're not also moving the ball around a lot. So, you know, if you pick a certain profile of player and you're maybe thinking, well, okay, we've five back rowers in our pack, we move the ball around a lot, use the full width of the field.
Yeah.
They didn't do that in construction. They did it once or twice. And I think it was opportunistic at times when they moved the ball based on Leinster mistakes.
Okay.
So I think they're not quite sure. They also call a number of mauls, driven mauls, and I don't know if they've got the right target man or the right fulcrum to be successful off driven mauls. Certainly not in comparison to the days of O'Connell, O'Callaghan, Dunnick O'Ryan, where they had a clear go-to man and a great fulcrum to build their maul around. Right. They did that two or three times
yesterday.
So you
need a fulcrum in the maul for it to
work. Well, I think you need a guy who's making the right call strategically, when to call the driven maul, where the hooker throws it, and then you do need someone as a pinpoint to build it around. I'm not quite sure they have that at the moment. So
because kind of to bluntly sum up last year, the sense on Munster was that quite often they were using their physicality as the main route to scoring tries, and there was a worry that when they came up against some of the bigger sides, they would struggle. And then over the summer, I certainly remember Gerry Flannery at one point talking in the preseason about how they were certainly trying to expand their attacking repertoire and develop new styles of attack and new ways of opening up teams, which is all perfectly logical and makes sense. So listening to you, we certainly haven't seen that come to fruition yet, and you'd be slightly worried for them?
Yeah, I think they're just in that halfway house. I mean, you could see what Gerry Flannery's talking about, you could probably see with Chris Farrell yesterday. He's a big guy, he's a physical guy, but they used him a number of times to try and throw wide passes on the run. He nearly did it to great effect. One went forward. It's a difficult skill to do at 13, run at full pace to throw a 25-yard pass on the hoof. But that type of stuff is coming into their game. But actually,
which wasn't there last year as much.
Well, it wasn't, but I actually thought they were stronger for it last year. I don't know if I'm being unfair to Munster's history, but I always thought Munster have a style that is very effective, and it was a very aggressive, combative pack, and it was obviously with the likes of O'Gara there was a 10 who dictated the game through territory, and they played with great simplicity. And I thought they after about October, November time last year, you know, obviously all the well documented events that happened, they seemed to simplify their game. They went on a 17 game streak where, you know, they didn't lose and they didn't look like losing a lot of games because they simplified their game. Yeah. Sometimes you can have, you know, summer off, too much time to think, and people start talking about high performance pathways and structures and buzzwords, and suddenly you're going away from everything, and you know, let's introduce a wide game, you know, because we've had a bit of time to work on it.
So it's very interesting. It might be a case that for the European games coming up, we might see Munster return to that simplicity of last year, where they'll double down on what they know they can do it very well, and maybe in certain games in the Pro 14, they work on expanding what they're able to do in attack. That could be a potential route through the season whereby they improve while still continue to get results.
I think that would be smart. I think...
Because they did. Remember Harlequins away and under the Rob Penny era?
Yes.
They'd been playing this wide-to-wide game. Yeah. It was being criticised. There were betting in problems. And then Harlequins away, whether the players did it of their own accord or whether Penny said, yeah, I'm on board, they went back to just about the most traditional... Munster, you could imagine, beat Harlequins away. O'Connell did that very memorable interview on Sky Sports, talked about how much it meant to these young players, and they were getting a lot of flack. And
it was a great interview.
It was great, and you're like, oh, they even have a chip on their shoulder again. It's brilliant. And it was real old school stuff. You know, so it shows that you can potentially go back to the more simple game plan.
Well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You talked about Arjen Robben coming in off his left foot, or Johnny Sexton's just constantly running that loop play because it works.
But against the bigger sides, they need a bit more variety?
I think you probably, when you talk about getting into a European Cup semi-final or final, you need to be able to create more, you need to be able to score more. But it's a nice conversation to have because you're in the semi-final.
Yes.
Next week, I think if Munster play like they played yesterday in this kind of in-between two stools, not sure what their style is, you can get kicked out of Europe in week one. You can't win anything in week one, but you can get kicked out of your group pretty quickly, you know, if you have a poor performance or you start. You're behind the eight ball very, very quickly if you lose your first group game. So if I was the Munster coach, I would go straight back to basics.
What we did last year, you all know what you're doing. Everybody's sure of their jobs.
Absolutely, yeah. A bit less experimentation. And like you said, Joe, you know, in Zebre away or something like that, potentially there's less riding on that fixture, you could be a bit more experimental.
So Razzy Erasmus and ultimately his successor will be looking at his roster, and he will see JJ Hanrahan, he will see Blyandal, he will see Keatley. What separates those guys as 10s? Is there a standout 10 there? How big is the gap?
I don't think there's a standout candidate at the moment.
Because I thought last year Blyandal had ended this conversation. He was clearly the number 10 and was playing great stuff.
Yeah.
Is it that Keatley has performed so well?
I think
Keatley's
performed very well, and I think there's, I would say it's probably a perception at this stage that Hanrahan can do a job there. He has to be given time to see, can he do a job there? I don't think it's in question that he's a footballer and he's got great ability. I'm not sure if he's a fullback. He showed great bravery yesterday. He showed good positional sense at fullback.
Yeah, when he came across to cover.
He did very well, and that's all you'd ask from a fullback. But it just doesn't quite fit for me with him as fullback. And to be honest, I think if they're going to play a certain brand, which is go back to basics and be simple, I definitely wouldn't play all three. I would either play...
Because you have Zeebo to come back into the
Yeah, and
as
I
well.
Think, you know, I think Zeebo would probably command that position if he comes back in. And I think Scanlon probably should be included. He gives them a left foot option in terms of playing territory and exits from their own half, which they really struggled with yesterday.
Okay, so if you have Scanlon coming back and Zeebo coming back, then you're going from three down to one suddenly.
Yes, I'd pick one of the three and I don't know which one.
Do you know much about Hanrahan's game as a 10? Have you seen enough?
No, I haven't. Yeah, I saw a lot of the world's that under-20s World Cup at the time. It was 5 years ago, and he got World Junior Player of the Year, and he looked like the great white hope, and he looked fantastic in that World Cup. I think in the interim then, he didn't get regular game time for Munster. He went to Northampton and had a stated aim to become their starting 10, which didn't happen either. And now he's back. There's an element of the prodigal son coming back. I mean, there's a lot of hope there for him.
And noticeably, this time around, he hasn't publicly come out and said, I'm back home to play number 10.
Yeah.
He's kept quiet on that front.
Yeah, well, that's probably a bit of experience shining through.
So, okay, so say Hanrahan, we don't have enough evidence to really be sure just yet about his credentials at 10. If you take Keatley and Blyandal, just park the kicking for a second, the tee kicking, because that's always held against Keatley. Now, it'll come back into the conversation because
it could be held against Blyandal too.
Could it?
From a place-kicking point of view, I think he's... Yeah, his style is an interesting style for placing. Some kicks, particularly on the left-hand side, he curls them right to left in.
Old-school way of doing it.
It's an old-school, but then some of them go the other way and some of them go straight. I wouldn't say he's got a consistent trajectory when he strikes the ball.
Right.
He doesn't have any... There's no air of expectancy when there was a penalty and Johnny Wilkinson or O'Gara were stepping up and you went out to make the tee because you're not even going to watch the penalty going over.
Okay, fair enough.
Everyone hangs around to watch the Blyandal penalties because they're not quite sure.
Keatley kicked well last week against Cardiff.
He did.
He missed one at the end. Yeah. Is his kicking markedly inferior to Blindell, or are they similar?
Not at all. Keighley's got, I think he's one of the thirds. He's in third place for all-time Pro 14 point scorers.
Yeah, but the perception would be that in the bigger games, at the bigger moments, that he has struggled.
Yeah, well, I wonder what the stats are. Perceptions and stats are different.
What's your perception?
My perception is I don't think he's a poor... I think he's a good place kicker.
Okay.
I think you got to give him the credit that he's amassed a number of points and he's definitely got some... You know, O'Gara missed a kick to win a European Cup in 2001 and he grew from it and came back better and stronger and learned from it as a kicker.
Yeah.
So the couple of times that Keighley has missed pressure kicks, I don't think he can just use it as a stick to beat the guy
it's
with.
It's true. And there's no doubt they linger in the memory. And
yes.
That's a problem with those things, and that's why stats are important. Okay, so if we're saying that neither Keighley nor Blindell is winning his place on the team through his place kicking, then compare them as 10s in open play.
Where I was impressed with Blindell last year was his ability to take the ball to the line and release a pass really late with great kind of speed on it and give them another dimension in their tack in the outside channel. He did that a number of times and he passed out of the tackle very well. He was a threat himself. So if he held on late, didn't make that wide pass, he could use a bit of footwork. He could get his arms free, pass to a back row player, which suddenly if you're defending a 10 who can be a threat in that first channel, you've got to stick, you've got to hold and watch him. But if you can whip a pass 20 yards on the run, you're suddenly narrow in defence. Something like the Irish, Finn Russell did that to the Irish team in Murrayfield last year in the first 20 minutes. He took it to the line and we held tight and narrow and then he whipped wide passes and you know, that cost us hugely actually in the Six Nations last year, that first 20 minutes. So a 10 who can do both of those things, as Sexton can do it, you know, it's a big weapon. So that would be Blindell's, probably his strength, I would say. But I think Hanrahan can do that. If you really had to push me on an opinion, having seen Keighley, having seen Blindell, I would say, why not give Hanrahan 380 minutes in a row at 10 and see what he's like? Because
with two of those 80 minutes being European matches.
Yeah. I mean, they had the courage to try the three of them together with various, you know, different combinations yesterday. So it's not a priority for them to have consistency, clearly, because they wouldn't have done that this week.
And what's Keighley's strength then?
I think Keighley, he can run. Okay, he's got a bit of pace. You saw that with the intercept. So again, he's no slug. So you got to keep an eye on him in attack. I think he's probably got a better out of hand kicking game than Blindell.
Right.
He ironically, his best kick out of hand yesterday came in like the 40th minute and 0.1 seconds. He had a long raking touch finder. Then it was half time. So he never got to capitalise on it. So that's a killer one to happen as a 10. You know, you nail that kick and then the ref blows half time and you don't get to...
Get the applause.
The applause, yeah.
Yeah. Could it be a case then that are they different enough that we might have a horses for courses revolving number 10, even for big games, like not just revolving for the bigger games and the lesser games, but like equally important games, we might have different 10s in there, I wonder. Possible at this
point? Well, it's possible.
You don't think
I don't think it would be effective. I think if you were to look at the difference yesterday,
there was
Leinster knew exactly what they were about in various areas of the field because there's a consistency and a clarity about who's their lead guy and their decision maker.
Yeah.
It'd be nice. It'd be aspirational to think you could chop and change your 10 for different situations and everybody, you know, assumes their role and goes about it with minimum of fuss. But the reality is, under pressure, players need someone to fall back on, a decision maker and a general in the midfield. And I think you got to back one of them and give them a run. And they've not quite done that yet.
That's all very interesting. I'm talking to you about this because obviously you know that position better than most. We've got Andrew Dunn here in studio. So Leinster sent agent Reggie Corrigan in just to really stir it up at the end on TG Carr.
What do you think about the intensity from your teammates out there? Was there enough in the game? Did they give enough, do you think?
What you mean, your question to my teammates?
No, I'm asking about the intensity that came from the team. Did you feel that they were giving it as much as they possibly give out there?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm not trying to catch you out here, Peter. I'm just genuinely asking the question if you felt that, you know, maybe they left something in the dressing room that there could have been more that they could have given.
Oh, 100% not.
It's a good moment. It's not that big a deal, ultimately. It's just one of those things. It's just, it's quite funny because it's Reggie Corrigan.
Yeah.
And I'd say, I mean, Omani afterwards called it a silly question, and I don't think it's quite a silly question. We've talked about various teams' intensity across all different sports, and I think Reggie's given his experience in the game. If he sees an issue he thinks Munster have with their intensity, he's more than entitled to ask it. I don't think it makes it silly, but I can see how Omani looked at him as he did in the interview, because he wasn't looking at Reggie during a lot of the questions, and then when he realised what he was being asked,
he fixed it on
him
suddenly, pretty quick.
Yeah, gave him the death stare and said, yeah, are you asking me what I think you're asking?
It was kind of a scary death stare.
Yeah. It's not a silly question, is it?
No, I don't think, I think you can ask a captain, do you feel the team gave enough? I don't think you're calling to question the culture or history of a team. He's talking about the 80 minutes yesterday. Mm. The likelihood, you'd probably like to think if O'Mahony felt that, which he clearly didn't, but if he felt it, he probably wouldn't have said it anyway. It's probably something as a captain or manager, you'd go into the changing rooms, close the door and let loose on the players if you felt that was the case. But yeah, to be honest, looking at the game, I didn't at any stage feel Munster weren't giving it all the intensity they needed to. I think they'd other issues.
But, so it wasn't necessarily a question you were expecting based on what you'd seen?
No, I wasn't expecting the question. And then you've obviously got the history of Reggie being a Leinster captain and Munster losing up in the Aviva and an ex-captain asking this question. It's got a good bit of fun. It stirs it up. I don't think Reggie did it on purpose.
I think he was kind of horrified as he saw the way it was unfolding. And he said, I'm not trying to get a rise out of you. I don't think he was.
I don't think he was either. But naturally enough, it did get a big rise. And then everyone starts chatting about it. So it was a bit of fun.
That wonderful moment in live broadcasting where you realise, oh my God, I'm in the midst of a viral moment. And this is a runaway train and it's not turning around. Probably not, like, for Munster. I mean, there's a mixture of new age and old school. I'm sure that will be talked about during the week. Mm. Former Leinster player questioned our intensity, questioned our attitude, everything. They'll use all that, and I would say they'll come out next week a different animal.
So yeah, you'd like to think so, yeah.
What did you make of Leinster?
I think they look strong. Again, I would, they know what they're doing. They've got a clarity. They have a sense of purpose about their play. Years ago, I played a game against Northampton, and Carlos Spencer was playing 10 for Northampton. Now, Spencer is known for lots of things. He wasn't known for clarity of purpose in terms of strategy or tactics. He was a brilliant kind of player who could do the unexpected.
Yeah.
But there was one game that stood out to me. We had a Tongan winger called Selesi Fanau, and he was dodgy under a high ball, and it was raining in the rec bath against Northampton. And Spencer put a high ball up on him after 2 minutes, and he broke the guy in a 20 to 30 minute period. He started shouting at him. He was telling him the next ball was going up on, and he put a bomb after bomb after bomb up.
Here it comes,
and
you're getting another one.
Exactly. And it was good entertainment in a strange way, even though I was on the losing side. But Sexton went after that strategy yesterday. That gives a team a big lift when you've got a guy who's got the confidence to be, you know, utterly, you know, focused on this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to keep doing it because it's working. Mm. Because very often in any environment, if it's working, players don't keep doing the exact same thing. They go and do something else on the next phase, or they don't keep kicking a high ball. They say, oh, I better vary it and pass to someone else.
It's amazing how often that happens. And it's like this weird new age prescribed game plan. Because do you remember even England last year coming to Dublin in the Six Nations, and Jarrod Payne dropped every ball that came near him, but they didn't. They just left him away with it. They should have kept bombing them at him and kept running at him. He'd been out for a long time injured.
Yeah,
he had dropped two balls. I had a Connacht fella beside me talking about Tiernan O'Halloran and saying, "Bloody hell!" I mean, you know, but he was let off the hook a bit that day.
Yeah,
Jarrod Payne. But Sexton is confident enough in himself.
Yeah, he's got this gravitas about him. Yeah. He's such a senior player at this stage. He came back in and he changed the course of the series for the Lions, himself and Farrell. Like, he was in a situation where, you know, Sean O'Brien mentioned a couple of weeks ago, himself and Farrell effectively came in and changed what they were doing at British Lions level. So he's quite comfortable to hammer home whatever point of advantage he can find.
Yeah.
That has a knock-on effect on your entire group. He then moved away from it and he was able to, say, repeatedly play the loop play because it was working. But I think Lancaster's influence in their attacking play in general has given them a sense of purpose in all their attacking phases. They've got great width. They've got guys running angles that are either they can receive it or it goes behind their back. Okay. But both options are almost always on. You see a lot of attacking structures where a player's running that decoy line, but you know he's a decoy. The most effective decoys, you don't know he's a decoy.
Sure.
So I think there's an attention to detail in Lancaster's training. He's very much the on-field rugby coach who's pulling back a guy in training, whether they're doing it unopposed or they're doing it against defence in training. Pull it back, repeat it, do it right, make sure, you know, the attention to detail is there. And you can see it. I mean, they're scoring a hell of a lot of tries. They're breaking teams down well. I'm quite impressed with them at the moment. Yeah.
It's been a real redemption of Stuart Lancaster period in his career, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. And I think deservedly so. I think my view is he's an outstanding coach. And I think he didn't get the credit he deserved in his England role. I mean, he coached an England side that absolutely destroyed the All Blacks. 38 points on the All Blacks. Not me. Has anyone, apart from Ireland last year with Joe, I don't think anyone's put that amount of points in the All Blacks in 20 years. And he did okay. He had difficulty towards the end. I need the big World Cup fallout. But I think it was a hugely smart appointment by Leinster. And I think they're reaping the benefits of it.
Yeah, because I mean, his stock was so low when he arrived here. There were genuine conversations about, I mean, are we sure? Do we really want to take this guy on, even in that capacity under Leo? And
yeah.
Now you're thinking, how long can we hang on to Stuart Lancaster
Absolutely, for? Yeah. It was an inspired choice by Mick Dawson or whoever made it in Leinster.
Anything else about Leinster's play? I'm asking that question in the context of a team who got to European semi-final last year. And really, when you look back at that semi-final, they dominated the second. They threw that semi-final away. I'm sure they will feel very frustrated with it. So this is a team now who are very credible European contenders and will be going about their business in that way. So in that context, anything else about their play strike you as good, bad, majorly different from last year?
Not particularly, no. Yeah. I mean, the only thing is that they're getting additional experience into players. Rory O'Loughlin is...
Yeah, two tries yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, but the first try, if you stood behind the posts and looked at it from... The camera, the replay showed an angle from behind the post. He got a static ball in front of three Munster defenders 10 yards out from the try line.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no... If you freeze frame it, there's no chance he should be scoring that. And he did it brilliantly. I mean, he isolated Ryan, I think, the defender. He hit and spin, he got through, he wriggled leg drive, he got tackled, he still reached and scored. He's that type of player coming through at Leinster. It makes them fearsome because they just keep producing guys. Their back row, you know, the resources they have in the back row is incredible. They've arguably two of the best props in the Northern Hemisphere. The likes of Sean Cronin coming off the bench. They've made a really good acquisition in Faraday. They've got Devon Toner there. They've about nine back rows they could pick. They've Luke McGrath, who's probably coming towards the peak moments in his career to date, and I think there's a lot more to come. Arguably probably top two out halves in the world. And actually one thing I liked yesterday, and again it's something that Joe hasn't used with Ireland a whole lot, is Henshaw as a distributor. The last Six Nations, we didn't really use Henshaw in anything other than carrying it up and crashing it up.
Get over the game.
In Lancaster's attacking system, he's using him as a passer, and I think it's refreshing to see it. And I always like seeing a passing 12 as opposed to Kevin Maggs 12, but you know, Kevin Maggs did a great job for 70 caps for Ireland as well. So it's just nice to see a little bit of variation in there.
Yeah. Henshaw was on Player Mic as well yesterday, which is great.
Yeah.
It's great insight.
Very entertaining.
It's absolutely brilliant. So every pause and play, they edit out the curses, I'm sure. Yeah. And some of the stuff that Henshaw would prefer not to go out. There must be some agreement beforehand that you guys are not going
to... I was actually wondering how that works.
I presume it must be, I'll do this, but don't screw me over here, fellas. Yeah. Because Owen Redden did one a couple of years ago, which was fantastic as well. And CJ Stander has done one. and they add so much to the game. So yeah. After every break and play, like Henshaw was right behind O'Loughlin for the try. Yeah. And he's like, Loco, I'm here. Go on, Loco.
There was one, a couple, I think was start of the Super 15 season, Quade Cooper and Carmichael Hunt did one for the Queensland Reds and it went viral. It was just outstanding.
Yeah.
They were calling things that had nothing to do with the pre-planned attack. They were shouting across the field to each other. It was a really good insight to...
Wow. Just on the hoof. Let's innovate here.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it was really good. Henshaw came across really well. I mean, he's... I know he's a quiet fella off the pitch, but he's talking on the pitch. He's communicating. He's involved. It's good. Like yeah. I was kind of like, so that's what he sounds like when he's not slightly shy in front of the
media.
Yeah,
dude, it showed a different his character in a different light.
Yeah,
he's obviously physically tough, but I loved seeing a guy in his role there who was as verbal on the field, because you would have thought he mightn't be with Sexton inside him. And you know, it's great to see, and it's great for Ireland to see a guy who's taken on responsibility like that. He's probably looking to have an impact in decision making on the field again, which is a positive. So
I was thinking, will he still feel like the new boy at Leinster? But he clearly doesn't. He's a returning
like
line.
Or sound like it. Yeah.
Pleasure. Thanks so much for coming in. That was really interesting stuff. Andy Dunn, thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe.
Off the ball.
On News Talk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.